everybody. It's time for Microbrew. Happy New Year. New year, new brewer season, kind of, I guess. And let's dive in. Let's talk about what we haven't had a chance to talk about over the last few weeks since we last potted at you. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am a trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, host of this podcast. And on the other line, Kurt Hogue. Kurt, I'm so happy to talk to you. It's 2026. Year of the Milwaukee Brewers championship season, and we are we've got some things to talk about. Not a lot. Baseball's been slow. It's just time. Too much time has gone by, and we need to chat, Kurt. And I need to know, of course, how has your holiday gone? What have you received in gifts? What were some of the highlights of the season? Tell me everything, Kurt. It has been too long.
It matters not, and you know this well. It matters not what I'm receiving. It matters what my child is receiving, and her birthday is right after Christmas.
Oh,
so she receives a lot. And part of it, I think, is there's a little self-preservation as well. Like, you go so hard for the kids' Christmas and birthday that, like, you just can't reciprocate that for other, like, you can't duplicate that for other people.
Yeah.
So I got a new golf club, and I'm excited about that.
A single golf club. Is that a singular golf club?
Yes and no. Like, drivers, yeah.
Okay.
Normally, it's a 60-degree wedge. I've only been using a pitching wedge since I lost my sand wedge at Brown Deer in the summer of 24, like midway through. I just haven't gotten around to buying a new wedge. So I've been pitching anything from like 110 in, we're just pitching.
Yeah.
We're in the sand. We're pitching.
This doesn't seem unusual to me at all. I don't know golf, so I basically just use driver, like 3-iron pitching wedge putter. Like, that's kind of what I do. I don't know what 60-degree means.
So what I appreciate that comment, JR, because I am a golf. I very much enjoy golfing. Become a hobby as I've gotten older, as every other white male does the same. I'm not great. I'm fine. I'm passable. But I'm going to spend my money golfing. Okay. And I don't need to spend too much. Oh, look, Derrick Henry is breaking loose against a team wearing yellow pants.
I'm on the Division III NCAA championship game. Shouts to UW River Falls.
I don't want to spend it on equipment. I'm not going to go buy fancy irons. I'm not going to buy a fancy driver. Well, maybe I'll get a used one every once in a while. Like, oh, well, that's good. I have seen you golf. The clubs you have are the clubs you need, buddy.
Yeah.
And ultimately, how many shots better are you going to shoot if you spend $400 on those irons or $200 to $300 on that driver? To me, that's not worth it. If it's worth it to you, that's great. That's fine. I will be a few strokes worse on my handicap because I like playing. I don't like spending money on clubs to play.
Yeah.
But I got a 60-degree wedge, so I'm excited to have another club in the bag that I'm probably not going to be able to control, but that's fine.
Still don't know what a 60-degree wedge means, but honestly, I don't really care. So because I'm not a golfer, and I respect that you enjoy the game. It is not.
I could see you getting into pickleball.
So I'm solid at pickleball. I enjoy. Except Kurt. I am definitely. I get out of breath so fast, man. I mean, that's just old age and rotundity, which is what I provide. And unfortunately, I can barely play a whole set of pickleball without, you know, keeling over dead. I can still hang with my young son, who's pretty good with a racket. So. That is probably the closest old man sport that I can participate in, but especially after the holiday meals that I've had and the snacking and the not working out, I am pretty close to death. I feel like I'm going to die. I need this thing to be over. This holiday season?
Says the man in the Pepsi shirt.
Oh, brother, I do love my Pepsi, but I've been getting heartburn.
How much Pepsi? Have you stopped drinking Pepsi?
No.
How much have you had this holiday season?
Well, as diehard listeners know, I had gotten into a routine where I would only drink Pepsi on Sundays. And that was good for a while. And I fell off of my wagon and I have had so much Pepsi this break. I need to get back on that profile on that system, because quite honestly, it is. I have heartburn all the time. It's destroying me. I got to move on. I could only have like one Pepsi today before I was like, I have to be done. It's so bad. I need this break to be over. This holiday stuff, like, it shouldn't leak this far into January. I'm at my wit's end. No. I need those children to go back to school.
No, this was the worst possible alignment of the calendar. Yeah. And I'm sure that look, it comes up once every 7 years, so it's happened before, but it's never happened when I have a kid.
Yeah, I don't remember it being
this where like before. It has been Sunday every day for two full weeks for me.
Same here. Yeah,
that's dying. How it feels. And I'm dying.
Including all of the church that I have been to over the last, it seems like church every day. I'm ready to move on with my life, Kurt. I food, church, children. I need them. I need it all gone. I just need a routine that is normal.
Have any hymns?
We busted out a We Three Kings today, which I did not expect to hear. I have not heard that in a church setting in forever. Post Christmas We Three Kings. Well, as you know, Kurt, the Christmas season doesn't really end on Christmas, at least as the church sees it. So We Three Kings, we got a little bit of O Come All Ye Faithful, which is the number one Christmas hymn. And I've only heard it. I hear it very rarely during the season, much more rarely.
Is Silent Night not a hymn?
No, it's a hymn, but it's fine. It's good. I love how it ends the service. Oh, with the candlelight and all that.
I thought you were going off like popularity. The one that's sung most for me, often.
Personally speaking, O Come All Ye Faithful is my jam. That's the song I want closing the show. That's not what I get. I get it somewhere early on, and that's fine. I will take it. I will take it at any time. We got a little snippet of it today, which I enjoy. That is my personal jam, and I'd like to hear it more, quite honestly.
It's like playoff Miz. You don't need it. You don't need it at the end. You don't need it at the beginning. You'll just put it, just fit it in there somewhere.
I honestly, Kurt, did not have a good segue, but you, sir, you brought that game today to this particular podcast. We realize there's not a lot of Brewers stuff going on. The Brewers are not making trades. The Brewers are not adding people. The Brewers are doing nothing. They're waiting. And you know that when spring training rolls around, they're going to start making moves. But we did have some topics, some thoughts, some things we wanted to kick around. I guess it's like an off-season three up, three down, although probably a little more expansive than that. First of all, Kurt, you are now a geopolitical reporter. As we sit here on Sunday night, you wrote about Jackson Churio, who is of great interest to Milwaukee Brewers fans and the Milwaukee Brewers community. He's in Venezuela, and there's a lot going on in Venezuela. And Kurt, I bet when you woke up on Saturday, one of the million Sundays in a row that we've had, you did not know that you would be writing about Venezuelan politics as it relates to the Milwaukee Brewers. But here we are, Kurt, in the year of our Lord 2026. Congratulations, you've crossed over out of the sports realm into something else entirely. I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you. Well, I will say, I did have an inkling that at some point...
You're in touch with the White House?
I'm in touch with understanding trends.
Ah.
And observing the world around me. Not always my strength, but in this particular instance, I think a lot of people that are Brewers fans especially realize that there may be a parallel at some point to pay attention to. These worlds might collide. I guess that's not a parallel. That'd be a perpendicular to pay attention to. They will crash. But so, I mean, like, I'll say loosely, I've been following the news, I guess is the way to say it. And yeah. I think it was Christmas Eve and Churio was playing a game in Maracaibo, which is his hometown and where his Venezuelan team plays. And that night, it was later reported that there was a drone strike, not entirely, like, it's a big city, but not entirely far from where the game was played. So at that point, I think that was something certainly that catches your attention on multiple fronts, but especially as far as it pertains to like my job and our job, which is, I cover baseball, but suddenly these two things are intersecting. And that's very, very unusual, I think, to say the least. But yeah, I'm no longer a fraud. I can consider myself a real journalist.
Yes. Especially if you're in touch with the White House.
All that training in J school that I have used 0% of the time since then.
Mm-hmm. Threw away some money on that one, Kurt. let's cut to the chase, because he's in Venezuela. He's not the only Brewers player in Venezuela. The Brewers have a lot of Venezuelans on their team. William Contreras, who I believe is not in Venezuela, but you've got Jefferson Caro, who might be their backup catcher this year. You've got Andrew Monasterio, who's been playing in his home country as well. Potentially important contributors, certainly Churio atop the list there. Like, I know you reached out to the Brewers. Long way to go before spring training. But right now there's no flights, you know, that you're not going to be able to get on a plane and get back to the United States very quickly. I know they've delayed some of the baseball down there. Churio was tearing it up. He had actually a huge night the night before this all went down, a huge extra inning home run for his team. But like, how worried should you be if you're a Brewers fan? Like, as you've looked into the story at all, should it be like a little concern? It's definitely more than a little concerning. There are much bigger picture issues involved here. Everyone knows that, but are we sure Jackson Churio is going to be able to get back to the United States at this point?
I would say, I mean, there's a lot of scrambling going on, and that's not optimal for the players, for the teams, for anyone in this situation. I ultimately am not overly concerned, as long as things from some brief cursory glancing I did this afternoon for the podcast, this is not confirmed 100% source geopolitical information this time, JR, but it seems like the streets, everything is relatively quiet in Venezuela. So I think that's a good thing from a baseball Brewers perspective. Like, that is where my concern would lie, is he, like, Churio's gonna be able to get to the States. Not only does MLB have some muscle in this area and a lot of experience getting visas, getting things expedited, figuring logistics out. I don't know if private planes come into the equation too, but there's money. There's like, that would not be my concern by the time spring training rolls around. Really, we got a month to go for them to figure that out. Also, yeah, like, there will be flights going. I don't know, Caracas to, you can figure it out, to like Cancun or somewhere. I think ooh, I think the U.S. Travel stoppage on the Caribbean ended. I believe it was it expired on Sunday. So like, the airlines are
capable of using the airspace.
Yes. So that is not my concern. I think it's just a general concern of a messy situation and some unknowns.
Yeah. I think it's like, if you look around sports, obviously there are a lot, for example, Russian players who play NHL hockey or even in the NBA. You know, it's a very fraught relationship between the United States and Russia, but this still finds a way to work out. So it's probably not something that ultimately will be a concern, you know, but not a story that's going to go away. I mean, surely it's a strange situation for the native Venezuelans, with a little bit of a power vacuum. Of course, they now have sworn in their vice president, so it's not maybe as stark a power vacuum as it was in the immediate moments after Nicolas Maduro was brought to the United States. But holy smokes, lots to follow. The Microbrew podcast now has dipped its toes into geopolitics. I'm very excited about this, Kurt. I feel like we're going to reach a whole new audience. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah, can we tag this? Can we tag this under?
Yeah, why do we tag this?
Current events.
That might be just slightly disingenuous. I don't feel like we brought a lot to the conversation in terms of what's going on. But
I think the Brewers would have appreciated a heads up, though, that this was coming.
Yeah, you hear that, Donnie? Yeah. Donald Trump, could you please? The Brewers rely on Venezuelan players as much as any team in baseball. Yes. You've got to give them a heads up, man.
Yes, they have realized, hey, look, there's a market inefficiency in this one country. let's please keep things as stable as possible. The Brewers could have used some heads up. I think some other people would have appreciated a little heads up too, but that's life in the big big 2-6, JR. Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year to you. Let's
any resolutions?
Oh no, I don't do that. No. Anything that has been a positive change in my life has been born from either organic improvement or just one day I wake up and decide things are going to change. And I have had some success with that, some not success, but you know, I don't like to tie it to any one date. It has to come from within, Kurt. It has to be born of just personal will, not by a calendar. That's my vibe. That's my feeling.
I think we as a society have gone too anti New Year's resolutions.
That's fine. I have nothing against them. I don't think they're wrong.
I don't have any. It's just not who I am. But like,
yeah,
I think everyone, I don't think there's been a single person who has given me a resolution when I've asked. Like, I have not seen a single resolution for 2026.
Yeah. You know, nope. I was thinking about our church message today, but I feel like it's going to get too spiritual too fast. So I'm going to walk away from that. We're going to, let's go around the horn. Like, three up, three down style. Three up, three down style. I don't know if that's really the format here, but like, I just have some thoughts that I wanted to run past you. You maybe have some thoughts that you wanted to dive into as you've gotten through this offseason with very little Brewers news to talk about, unless we want to revisit the Angel Serpa trade. Wait, Angel Serpa. That's how we say his name. I don't particularly care about that. Oh, he's a Venezuelan though. Speaking of,
he is a Venezuelan.
You posted some stuff that I wanted to talk about, and I wanted to start here. So we'll just kind of go through the topics, and it doesn't have to be segued or tied together. We've been seeing a lot of Hall of Fame ballots coming through. Ryan Braun is not looking great for getting that 5%. There's still a lot of time to go. He doesn't have to get a ton of votes to reach 5%. But if you follow Ryan Thibodeau on Blue Sky or wherever you kind of follow that ballot tracker, incredible work, by the way, that's being done every year, keeping track of who's getting votes for the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. Ryan Braun, we know, is not going to be in the Hall of Fame, but he was getting some votes kind of early on in the tabulation process, and then those kind of dried up. So he needs 5% to stay on the ballot and appear again next offseason. It fascinates me, honestly, Kurt, that anyone would vote for Ryan Braun. And I say this as somebody who has deep respect for what he meant to the Milwaukee Brewers, obviously. Some of the more exciting moments in recent Milwaukee Brewers history tied to Ryan Braun. That's no secret. But it amazes me for two reasons. One is, you know, obviously there's the performance-enhancing drug stuff, you know, enough said there. In addition to the actual usage, you've got the very famous press conference that he gave, which was, I think, very off-putting to a lot of people. I'm surprised people would still vote for him despite that. Now, even if you are the type of voter who is completely dismissive of the performance-enhancing drug angle and you want to put players in on merits alone, okay, that's great. I don't think Ryan Braun comes close to meeting those standards. Like, he's not a Hall of Fame statistically. He's not a Hall of Famer statistically. He's very good, and his peak is very good, and maybe that's the thing that would draw people into casting a vote for Ryan Braun. But he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame. And on top of the stats, he's got like this sort of shady stuff on the off the field. So it's just amazing to me that he gets votes at all. I don't know if I'm delighted that he does. I think I am kind of. I am kind of glad that some people are recognizing how meaningful he was to the Milwaukee Brewers. But also, like, obviously, this is not going to end in Cooperstown. So what do you think about that? Like, when people vote for him, I'm just like, I think I appreciate that. But why? Like, why would you vote for a guy who's just so obviously, you know, what are the metrics that make Ryan Braun worthy of a Hall of Fame vote at this point?
Well, I mean, at his peak, he was better than most of the guys on that ballot. Like, Cole Hamels is getting a lot of Hall of Fame votes.
Oh, a lot of love for Cole Hamels.
A lot of he's at 30-something%. And this is what year? Is this year one for him?
Yeah.
Which means he's probably going to make it. And
I don't get that at all. That's crazy.
I don't hate it, because what I've wanted to see from the Hall and its voters, which we are not.
Not yet. Someday not soon, yet. Perhaps.
Someday soon. 10 years, you gotta have 10 years of service.
Yes.
Is I've wanted to see the standards adapt for pitchers with how the game has adapted for pitchers, aka Johan Santana should probably be in the Hall of Fame in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even make it a second year. So on one hand, like Felix Hernandez and Cole Hamels getting a lot of love, like I appreciate that the times have shifted, or people are shifting their paradigms a little bit. That's good. To vote for Ryan Braun, you've got to be like, I wouldn't do it. I can, like, you have to really squint though, JR, to see the case. You're right. It's peak It's the MVP.
Yeah.
And then it's, yeah, it's a lot of, it is a lot of stretching. It's, I mean, really, like, right, it's like almost entirely peak from 2008 to 15. You know, he's probably one of the 10 most valuable players in baseball in that time, 8 most valuable players in baseball, whatever. So it's not a surprise that he's not getting to 5%. But I do think it is good to see enough diversity of thought in the Hall voting. I think like our award voting, except for the AL MVP this year, has gotten like a little too homogenous, maybe.
I agree with that for sure. Yes.
Like there's a lot of unanimous votes. And as someone who's voted in like 4 of those unanimous awards, I'm not going to be the one voting differently because I felt very convicted and this is the right pick in the way that I view the game. But I've just been surprised in a lot of those that like there isn't one. I don't know if people are afraid of being the dissenting vote or if we all just kind of think the same. I don't know. But there is clearly still some differing thought as far as what constitutes a Hall of Famer. And there's like 10 people that are going to vote for the Hall of Fame that think Ryan Braun constitutes a Hall of Famer. Look, there's worse players than Ryan Braun in the Hall of Fame.
Plenty of worse players on this ballot for sure.
Yeah.
And Gonzalez, shout to you, buddy. But like,
and look, if we're going to get into the character clause and the morality and everything, Andrew Jones is polling to get elected.
He's going to get elected. Yeah. Or it's looking very promising.
That is, I mean, while he was playing a huge, you know, big domestic violence dispute.
Well, and Carlos Beltran, who is also likely to get elected. Now, this is not as severe as what Andrew Jones has had, but he is tied to the Astros thing, you know, like,
correct.
Was he a cheater? You know, so that's part of it too.
Yeah. Whereas we've seen Omar Vizquel's votes drop off dramatically. After his, I believe it was all post playing career or maybe yeah. During, I don't know. There was some post playing career.
He was an unlikely Hall of Famer or at least a little bit more of a long shot.
Yeah. Career. Yeah. I think he could have snuck his way in though.
Maybe. Yeah.
And yeah, his score has dwindled. And then Ryan Braun is, I mean, I would classify Ryan Braun more in the Omar Vizquel camp of people are just like, you won't even go there and that's fine. That's your decision. I think it's just interesting how where these lines are drawn.
Yeah, I agree with that. And a lot of times you hear like, why is a player doing better in year 7 or year 8? You know, like, did he play more games? And of course the answer is no. Nothing has changed about his case, but how we evaluate a case has changed, which is why you want, if you are trying to get into the Hall of Fame, maybe, you know, you do want that 5%, if only because it gives you another shot, another year for people to evaluate your case and maybe some perception changes about what's valuable about you. And you mentioned that about pitchers. I think that's very true with pitchers because what constitutes a good starting pitcher has completely changed. You know, the number of innings thrown, the number of strikeouts, those counting stats, you know, we're talking about Freddy Peralta as one of the more dominant pitchers in the game. And he is, and he goes 5 innings to start because that's just, you know, that's what a starting pitcher does. I mean, Freddie probably, you know, could definitely work deeper into games. We know this, but like the greatness is just going to be measured differently. And as you look backward at a guy who's been eligible for the Hall of Fame 8 years, and you're like, you know, like Felix Hernandez is only in his second year, but he's a good example. He's seen a big jump. I think more and more you're just like, oh, wow. Like by today's standards, this guy is like, he's a god. Like we should definitely be putting him in the Hall of Fame. So you do want that 5% if you're that player, because another year of evaluation, you just don't know. Like you could see a huge jump the way that Felix jumped this year. If things fall for you. Now, I don't think that's going to for Ryan Braun right now. He's at trending at 3.3%. A lot of votes to go. You get a lot of votes
that will not have him.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of votes that, you know, first time voters, like they have different, generally younger, they probably have a different set of criteria from the average person. So that's sure. Why things change as much as they do. I am surprised to see Andrew Jones, who's right now trying to get 82.9%, needs to get to 75. That's pretty healthy. And there's still, again, so many votes to go, but it's looking safer and safer for him and for Carlos Beltran, who I think you would agree two guys that they're okay. They were great.
Beltran's a no doubt Hall of Famer.
If you can get past
the largest on field scandal.
Yes, one of the best postseason performances I've ever seen in my life. In addition to just being very steady over a long haul, but you know, like there's a lot of guys on this list that you're like, all right, they were fine, they were good, in their playing days. But I wonder if that, like, the players you see now create opportunities for guys who are maybe Hall of very good players who get more of that voting attention because there just aren't as many slam dunk cases on the ballot. I don't think any of these guys are actual slam dunk cases. I mean, yes, Beltran is very good, but I don't think any of these guys are like, oh yeah, put that guy in the Hall of Fame. Chase Utley has seen a big uptick. Chase Utley, I think, eventually is going to get in the Hall of Fame.
Chase Utley's a Hall of Famer.
I think over time, for sure. I mean, that's just the way that he's being evaluated. In terms of, like, if you would ask me, when you watch Chase Utley play, do you think he's a Hall of Famer? No, but
I would say no.
But yeah, when you look at the stats over time, it's like, there's a good case. There's a good case there.
Yeah.
All right. That was my first topic to discuss, Ryan Braun in the Hall of Fame. What do you got, Kurt? You have a topic you want to hit? Or do you just want me to rattle them off?
You have more?
Well, I got a whole bunch, but
I didn't know. Okay, give me one.
All right. Well, let's lean into something that you were working on this offseason.
Oh, I know where we're going with this. Okay, yes, go ahead.
Some video work by you. You are very good at finding these video clips. I love it when you get on the topic and you just like start digging. And let's talk about Joey Ortiz, shortstop Joey Ortiz. Brewers are in an interesting offseason spot with him because they have a couple guys in Cooper Pratt and Jesus Mate who are going to eventually be shortstop for the Milwaukee Brewers, or at the very least, you know, like on the roster. Right now they're shortstops in the minor leagues, and Cooper Pratt defensively pretty much profiling as a big leaguer already, or pretty close to it. So they don't want to go out and get a shortstop for 6 years or something. Not that those guys are even available, because they've got these guys coming up. So there isn't an obvious way to move on from Joey Ortiz. And let's not forget, despite his very significant offensive shortcomings in 2025, he was a solid defensive player. Oh, and the team won 97 games. So clearly they can manage having Joey Ortiz's offense in there. On the other hand, his offense is so bad, and you should put it together with these video clips showing his swing decisions are so bad, how he would just take pitches down the middle and then swing at pitches way off the plate in the same at bat. You had like 10 examples of pitches where he just, or of at bats where he just let a pitch go by.
I think it was 24 at bats.
24 at bats where you let a pitch go by.
It's a pretty specific search, like 24 at bats where he takes a first pitch down the middle. And then later in the at bat swings at a pitch. I think I don't remember what the exact parameter was, but it was like 5+ inches off the plate. Something like that.
I want to know if you
got a close pitch.
No. Do you think the Brewers are not doing enough to really try something more creative at shortstop? Or is
this just fine? I think
you do think it's fine.
Okay. I do.
Why should we believe that that's going to? I guess we don't have to believe it's going to get better. But do you think there's reason to believe it could get better?
Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that a team that won 97 games and was in the NLCS and we should just give them a pass in the off season and be like, yeah, you just don't do anything again. It worked for you last time. It'll work for you again. Like, I'm not there. I think this is obviously the position you upgrade if you can. But the Brewers can't. They're not going to. Almost certainly. Ha-Sung Kim got 20 mil. We've talked about this. When you have,
he doesn't even have to play to get new contracts.
When you have Joey Ortiz was worth what, 1.5, 2 WAR last year?
Was it that?
That
high?
Is the definition of floor, my brother. He was worth like 13 outs above average. That's pretty good. Dang good at shortstop. When you talk about a player's floor, that is the definition. It would be almost impossible for him to, unless he gets monstarred further and has a 400 OPS, it would be hard for him to be worse on offense. The defense could regress. So I will certainly allow for that possibility. I don't think it will. He's talented, but like you have a 2 WAR player floor upside of a 3 WAR guy. I really don't think it's all going to click for him. I just don't. The swing decisions, as we'll get into, are basically the reason for that, but nevertheless, that's what you have. You have tailored a lot of your pitching staff to a certain style, a lot of sinkers, A lot of sinker slider guys, some cutters, like the ball's on the ground, the ball's in play. You're just not going to, like, even if the Nationals are trading CJ Abrams, you're not going to be the team that pays the most for him when you have never traded prospects of, you know, of any ilk for a real player. No offense to Eofree Rodriguez on that. So I think, like, ultimately I can talk myself into it being fine. I know people aren't going to like that, and that's fine. You shouldn't, like, it is, JR, if you want to be upset that your team is rolling out the guy, the shortstop with a 570 OPS, you're doing that two straight years, that's fine. You can be mad about that. That is okay. 570 OPSs are not good. But this is where we are.
I do want a point of order that he has a 0.3 BWAR. Now, he's quite a bit more highly regarded by Fangraphs. They give him a 1.4. Oh,
yeah, they use outs above average.
Yeah, so I trust that to a fair degree. So that's actually not terrible. And furthermore, you cannot be guaranteed if you find, given the current state of the free agency options or you know, most of the guys that you'd expect to be available at shortstop, you cannot be guaranteed that you would get higher than 1.4 WAR over the course of a full season. To me, though, it just does illustrate that, like, it's hard to get past offense when you're talking about any player evaluation. You really think first, what can they do with the bat? The Brewers just don't think like that. They are completely choosing defense first. Is the player a good defender? Then right, yes. Then we investigate. Yeah,
the bat is what costs you money.
That's right. That's right.
Let's call it what it is. So I do think on this topic, the Brewers need another infielder. We talked Please. About this last year as well when you got Durbin and Ortiz and Terang. You are one injury to any of those three guys away from having to play Monasterio every day. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, he was better than Choi Ortiz last year, so that might have actually been an upgrade.
Yeah, but we can't expect that again.
Although sustainable, no, not nearly to that level. So they need another guy there. I don't know how you make it, if it means you send out Monasterio down to AAA because of, you know, the roster construction's fairly tight at this point, given your two first basemen, but you can't roll into this year with that crew plus Anthony Siegler, because you got away with it last season. Joey Ortiz's swing decisions are very bad.
They're bad.
They're not good. More coming on that.
Tremendous.
In the coming weeks, but I mean, basically, he chases at a 50% plus clip with two strikes. He's just swinging everything out of the zone. And somehow not striking out a ton. Like, his strikeout rate was still, I think, like 14-ish%, somewhere in that range.
King of the pop.
Which is insanely low for a guy that chases 50% of the time with two strikes.
Man makes contact, but it goes up.
So you do start to see some of these, like, ingredients as the Brewers talk about. Like, the bat to ball is there. He does have some bat speed. You're like, it should be better, but he's not swinging at pitches right down the middle, like, more than almost anyone in baseball when he's in advantage counts. And then he's chasing wildly with two strikes. So that's where we're at with Joey Ortiz. That was a lot of Joey Ortiz talk.
It was a lot of Joey Ortiz talk. But honestly, this is what we're reduced to. When they don't make any moves, you got to talk about where this team can still improve. You know they will make moves. They will address some things on this roster.
For sure.
But they just do it once spring training is, like, underway or really, really close to underway. We have not heard anything more on Freddie Peralta or on Trevor McGill. It's been pretty quiet, I would say, across baseball in the trade market for the last few weeks. And maybe now that the children are going back to school, Kurt, and that we are getting back into our routine.
Yeah. These things will pick back up. I will tell you that. Yes.
The children are a blight on everyone in baseball trying to, you can't make deals when the children are here every Sunday.
I mean, the Brewers are also trying to get guys out of Venezuela.
That's true. There are bigger fish to fry. Let's stay on the infield, because I have another thought. Are we sure, Kurt, that Caleb Durbin is an everyday third baseman? I say this with love. He is my son's new favorite player. Got a jersey for Christmas.
Caleb, I was going to say, did you get that jersey?
Oh, I did. I got that jersey. And yes, I'm very excited about it. He was very excited about it. It was awesome. He is a big fan of Caleb Durbin. That's cool. Caleb Durbin is beloved by Zips, the preseason prognostication from Fangraphs that came out and has third base for the Milwaukee Brewers at a cool 3.2 projected WAR. I love that. Wow. That's really quite good. That's better than
remarkable.
A lot better than what you're getting out of DH, where Christian Yelich resides. That's better than what you're getting out of center field. It's marginally less than Churio and Frelick listed out in right field at 3.3. Turang is only at 3.4. Like, that's as one of the best spots on the diamond or in the entire roster. I don't know if I buy that, you know, like I still feel like the version we saw of Caleb Durbin in 2025 is just the best case scenario. You know, like, he got so much better on defense, and that's awesome. He was able to play off, you know, offensively, his bat played. I don't know if I'm yet a believer, and maybe that's just me and not the data that's put before me. I do feel like, and shouts to Jack Stern and the Spencer Michaelis on the Brewer Fanatic podcast. Listen to them earlier today. They were talking about this very thing. Like, if there's a sneaky spot where they could upgrade, it would be third base. They do have guys like Brock Wilkin. We could talk about him, I guess, as a possibility down the line, but I don't know if Brock Wilkin is better than Caleb Durbin. Like, I don't know.
No,
if I don't think he is. So, like, the question is there someone externally who's better than Caleb Durbin? Would Caleb Durbin be just as good and just as useful if you had him in a utility role? I'm thinking about all these things. Tell me what you think.
Well, I do think Caleb Durbin could be just as useful. I mean, your roster is going to be better. He'd be a very good utility player.
So good. Especially, I mean, they need to get him in a lot. Like, not an Andrew Monasterio utility player. Different circumstances.
I mean, the Brewers also, like, we should mention, the Brewers kind of tipped their hand a little bit when they were playing Siegler every day. Or not every day, but they were splitting them for, like, a good month there, where there are certain matchups with Durbin that they just didn't like. Not every right-hander, but certain, like, arm slots, pitch types from right-handers. They did not want Durbin to face them because Durbin, like, really, his swing is really going to struggle against those types of pitchers. That's not a death knell for him. I do not think his rookie year was, like, a fluke. Mm. I think, like, on the whole, it played out. I think he deserved the numbers he got, if that makes sense. I think he's got enough going for him at the plate that he'll be able to sneak out a 85, 90 WRC plus, something in that range. I also think the defense is legit. I can't believe I'm saying that. But I was very wrong about his defense, and I'm eating crow, and I'm on the other end of the spectrum where it's like, oh yeah, he's like just a good athlete and instinctive infielder. So Coleman Crow. But that being said, JR, yeah, you could upgrade at third base for sure. I've still had outfield as, like, I know they got Badu, but
yeah,
I still think there's room there as well to sneak something through. But third base, I don't get the sense that the Brewers are exactly, like, seeking that out, looking to do that. But it for sure is a possibility that might not cost you as much as shortstop, but ultimately, like, I don't know. I bet their numbers like Caleb Durbin. And when their numbers like a player, again, you get to the opportunity cost question. And I don't have a problem with Durbin Ortiz. Again, you would like to see the Brewers get better in some area.
Right. Yeah, the tricky thing is they won 97 games, as I just mentioned, more than any other Brewers team before, and they lost in the postseason in a way that wasn't because of one person. Like, it was never going to be. It's not because Joey Ortiz was a shortstop or they got hurt in one position and relied on. They just got blown out. Like, pitchers, hitters, all of it. Like, they got blown out. Although the pitching and defense was really quite good, but still, like, they weren't going to win with one roster move. So it's hard to go into the offseason and say, well, why would you do anything differently? Except it's extremely unsexy to do nothing differently. You gotta improve. You gotta keep moving forward. We knew this would happen. We knew it would be fairly quiet. I do think Caleb Durbin is is definitely capable of being a big league starter and a quality big league starter. I think this team is amazing. If Caleb Durbin is a super utility guy that plays almost every day and you have other options, I would love to see Brock Wilkin get a shot at some point. You know, I love him. I think there's a long way to go before we see that, but I'm going to have a lot of eyes, and I'm going to be watching AAA a lot. Nashville, I assume Cooper Pratt starts there at shortstop. I assume Wilkin will be there. There's going to be some guys that I'm super interested to see how quickly they catch on at AAA and if that has anything to do with the big league roster. All right, you mentioned Akil Baddoo. We mentioned Coleman Crow. I had this question, and I wanted to see if there was a good answer. Name for me Kurt Arando, who's going to make the opening day roster, the Vinny Capra Memorial spot, RIP. I love the idea that we don't know everybody who's going to be on the roster. Like, there's always a little bit of mystery. There's always somebody that we just aren't counting on right now who ends up coming out of spring training. And usually it's because of an injury, so that makes it a little hard to predict. But is there anybody that you have your eye on and you think that guy's going to be a Brewer, and maybe for most, if not all, of the season?
Easton McGee.
I love that. Great pick.
Tell so there's two reasons here. One, JR, how many options does he have?
Zer.
Have the Brewers rostered him on the 40-man for a while now, including into the offseason, despite this?
They have indeed, including multiple opportunities to have cut ties with him when they chose not to.
Did they roster Vinny Capra all offseason last year?
It was indeed the case.
They did. This is what the Brewers do. He will be on Easton McGee will be on the opening day roster.
Love that.
Oh, reason number two is Jack Stern loves him.
Loves him.
Which is actually a good reason for me to not like him. Just
Jack Stern knows ball when it comes to pitchers, though. He
I
does.
I can't. Yeah. I have to counter his.
Of course. Of course.
In that realm. But he's probably onto something. Like, when you start looking at Easton McGee stuff, he's onto something there. And the Brewers are onto something as well. So I'm going to go Easton McGee. Oh, the Brewers don't have their non-roster players listed on the – I guess they maybe haven't invited them technically to camp yet as an official roster move. So I can't think of the non-roster guys who would make the team. But then again, those guys are on minor league deals.
There's just so many guys coming back. I just feel like if there is a non-roster guy who makes it, it's going to be at catcher. Because right now it's just Caro and Contreras on the 40-man roster. And obviously that's the natural layout, Contreras, Caro. But in the event they decide, look, we just want to get Caro a little more AAA space, maybe they have. That. Yeah,
sure.
Maybe that's what we get. Sure.
Caro's going to be better than whoever that player is.
Are you surprised, as I look at this 40-man roster, that you still see the names Stuart Baroa and Tyler Black?
Tyler Black, no. Stuart Baroa, yes, but also no. Because bumping him off would require a corresponding move.
Well, yeah, I guess. Like, what are you going to, if you're not going to trade him, you might as well keep him.
But that would require you to, I mean, then you'd have to expect corresponding moves.
Right.
And it's, buddy, it's January 4th. We got a lot of ball game left.
If there's one thing the Brewers don't like, it's corresponding moves. Just moves.
It is funny to think about. Like, in the last few off seasons, they've made a couple early-ish pitching signings.
Yeah.
Pitching acquisitions, and it's just been total like garbage flames. Elvin, Grant Wolfram, Joe Ross.
They did get Sammy Peralta this year. Shouts to you, Sammy Peralta.
That's a waiver claim. I'm not counting that.
Very well. Very well.
That opportunity comes to your lap. The signing of guys named Elvin Rodriguez, you seek that out.
Yes. You know, they've gotten Josh Lindblom before. Like, they've found non-traditional guys to bring in. And you're right. We have not seen that yet this year.
The other name I'm going to go is J.B. Bukauskas.
Remember him? I do. Is he still in the organization?
Yeah, he signed a, I think he re-upped on a minor league deal.
He back?
Yeah, he's back.
They love J.B. Bukauskas.
And they should.
They should, yeah. It's been injured.
Injuries. I don't know. Unfortunately, his arm just may not be able to stay healthy.
Right.
But if it is, it's a good arm.
Agreed. All right, I got a couple more. And then I want you to hit me if you've got any lingering thoughts that you want to throw in here on our kind of random jump around.
I do.
It is college football season. We're in the final four of the
it is
Yeah, we're in the final four, whatever we call it, of the college football playoff.
Of the portal? Oh.
Yeah, the portal. Oh, yeah. There's.
I got my top four.
This is like, every time we get to this point in the season, I sort of picture like a board game where somebody gets angry, probably one of my children, and they just like throw the board in the air and all the pieces land in different places. Like, that's how college football is. There's no rhyme or reason method. It's just everything is just like going up in the air and it's going to land in some weird, unexpected place. That's how it is right now. The Badgers have some new guys.
Like Arkansas. Rice.
Right.
Where is Rice? I know it's in Texas, but where in Texas?
In Texas.
Can you tell me where? In Rice, Texas?
I used to know that, and it's a big city. Is it not? Is it not in one of the big? Yeah, it's in Houston. It's in Houston.
Rice is in Houston?
Yes, it's in Houston. Oh. It's on Main Street in Houston, Texas. Thank you, Google. It's as Houston as it can be, on Main Street.
Wow. My parents used to live in Houston, and I didn't know that.
Shouts to them. That's fantastic. Houston, one of our biggest cities in the country. Number five, I think, maybe six.
Not at the top of my list.
No. No,
it might be higher than that. It's huge.
You think, Jared, it's four?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's like right behind Chicago.
Okay, biggest cities in the USA, the fourth biggest. I'm going to say it's Philly, but we're going to Google it and we're going to find out for sure. This is very important.
Oh, Houston's bigger than Philly.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Wikipedia feels that Houston is the fourth biggest city in the United States of America.
Come at me.
Phoenix is fifth.
Philly come is at me.
Phoenix
come
is fifth.
At me.
That's amazing. I am impressed. I'm impressed. Fourth largest city in the United States, according to Wikipedia, the source of all knowledge, is Houston, Texas. I was going to talk about Arkansas, actually, which does not have one of the largest cities in America inside of it, but I wanted to talk about an Arkansas football team because I was looking to see what was up with Monty Harrison. For people who don't know that name, they probably should. He was traded to the Marlins in the package that brought Christian Yelich back to the Milwaukee Brewers on January 25th, 2018. He was one of the four prospects who went over there. Of course, all four of those guys have not worked out. Lewis Brinson was the headliner in that package. Jordan Yamamoto and Izan Diaz. I believe Diaz is still an affiliated Ball. I'm not sure any of the other three are. Well, I know that Yamamoto isn't. I know that Harrison isn't because he went to play college football. He's a 30-year-old football player at the University of Arkansas in this NIL era where you actually have professional guys going back to play college, sort of. Monty Harrison, who had been in minor league baseball and had gotten a cup of coffee in the big leagues, went back to play college football. I was really disappointed to see that he has done almost nothing at Arkansas. He's got like two career catches over 2 years in the program. He had like one catch in the first game of the season this year. He is a non-factor on a team that had like two wins this season. I was really disappointed. I figured, you know, if the team was bad, and I knew Arkansas was bad. Ooh, River Falls just had a really cool touchdown. I would figure that you'd get a little Monty Harrison. I was real bummed. I was real disappointed, Kurt. It hurt me to see Monty Harrison not contributing for Arkansas football.
I could see other Brewers prospect flameouts playing college football.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, I could see it.
I always thought Ricky Weeks is probably the best linebacker in any conference he suits up for. But
oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, the or tank. Box. Is he big enough to be a linebacker? Yeah, he's pretty.
He's a little short, maybe. A little on the short side, but college linebacker?
But maybe, yeah, college linebacker. Maybe too big to be a safety, though.
I think so. Yeah. I think we're talking college linebacker there.
I think Joe Gray
could do it. Oh, yes. What is Joe Gray?
He's playing banana ball, though.
That's right. You said that.
Banana ball. We've talked about Joe. This is a lot of. We've talked about Joe Gray more than like Brendan Woodruff.
Which brings me to my next topic. Next topic.
I'm so good. I deserve praise. Praise me for my segues.
I do praise you, Kurt. You are bringing the segues. I'm very proud of you. Is Brandon Woodruff going to be, well, actually, my initial question to you, which we discussed briefly, is Brandon Woodruff the best pitcher in Milwaukee Brewers history? I think he has a case. I don't think I ultimately land there. As people know, I'm huge, huge Ben Sheets guy. Teddy Higuera, of course, is always going to be in that conversation. But like Brandon Woodruff's numbers are crazy. And you compare them to Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns' numbers are better. But like Brandon Woodruff has been here longer and had, you know, some really huge playoff moments. And then you've got Freddie Peralta, who actually also is in the list. But really where I want to go is this. Is Brandon Woodruff going to be this team's ace? You know, I don't love calling team guys ace. But is he going to be the ace when we wake up on, what is it, March 28th? Is he the opening day starter?
All right. Once again, JR, nothing matters in spring training.
Nothing.
Nothing.
No.
One thing matters.
Something matters.
What is Brandon Woodruff's velocity in his first two outings?
I like it. They will tell you when it is not very high that it's just about a pitcher, you know, trying to ramp up for the season, and that's not completely unfair. You know, guys aren't going to be throwing 99.
Yeah, I mean, there's Freddie Peralta spring training starts where he's like 92, and you're like, ah, whatever. He's just the context here is different. So that's the thing we are paying attention to this spring. If it is sitting 94, 95 in spring, if it's touching 95 in spring, I would say, yeah, he's going to be the ace. He's going to be the ace. I would say that with a lot high confidence interval that Brandon Woodruff will be the ace. If his stuff is, you know, right next to that level of where it used to be.
I get the feeling your high level of confidence, though, imagines a world in which Freddie Peralta is not on this staff. Or does it?
I was saying that thing. Freddie's on the staff.
So you think Brandon Woodruff has the capability. And yes. Obviously, we have no idea how he'll bounce back health-wise. We assume better than last time. but yeah, everybody at full strength feel like...
It sure seems like the Brewers are going to do the thing again with their pitching. Like,
yeah,
their pitching is going to be incredible this year.
You think?
I think.
What, I can't name the five starters. I mean, I can name 10 guys who could be the five.
Yeah, they'll use 9, 10 starters.
If they trade Freddie, I don't know if I think that their pitching will be incredible. It'll be fine.
It still will be.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Lest you question Chris Hook.
I have tried questioning their pitching.
Should we get Hooky on the phone right now? You guys can have a nice chat.
Come on the pod. I'm happy to have Chris Hook on the pod. I think I did have him on once upon a time.
I'm sure there'll be challenges that arise and some bumps in the road, but it's not going to, you know, it's not going to be all smooth sailing for Mizorowski. There will be potholes for him. Like,
sure.
Who's to say Chad Patrick doesn't have a rough second, you know, second year in the bigs. Quinn Priester, like that's a regression candidate, frankly, you know, based off like the expected results. So, I mean, there's certainly going to be some struggles, but yeah. I think on the whole, they've got a really, really good staff. And if Freddie Peralta's around, like we've talked about, it makes a lot of sense to trade him. But also, the name of the game is to put together the team that gives you the best chance to win a World Series. And obviously, that's with Freddie Peralta.
Yeah, I still feel really strongly that if they want to have the best, you know, if they want to have a really good pitching staff, then bring back your, you know, 4-win pitcher, you know, as opposed to, you know, trading him for a couple guys that might get you like 2 wins each.
Is he? But what is he in 2026? That's a question. That's a question I'll pose to you. What is Freddie Peralta's WAR
in 2026?
Yes. What is his baseball reference WAR?
I think it's probably still 3.
Okay.
Don't you?
Yeah, I'd say 2.7 to 3.3 in that range.
Okay. I realize 3 is optimistic. It is.
That's a really good pitcher.
It is a really good pitcher. I was amazed when I looked at, going back to that question, is Brandon Woodruff the best pitcher in franchise history? He is the all-time leader in ERA among qualified pitchers in this organization at 3.10. Very impressive. And
not surprising.
Top whip in franchise history, 1.034. Very, very good.
Surprising. A little surprising. A
little bit, yeah. But Freddie is way up there. Hits per nine, strikeouts per nine.
I would have thought it's Freddie.
Yeah, he is. Hits per nine and strikeouts per nine is Freddie. Freddie is all over this leaderboard. I mean, I guess I knew that. I knew he would be, but
I was surprised. I'm looking up right now, and I've got, I mean, three of the five best starters in Brewers franchise history on the top shelf. That's Freddie, Corbin, and Woody. One of the five is up there. His name is Ben Sheets, and the other one's Teddy Higuera. I think that's what it is.
I mean, unquestionably, somewhere in there is the Mount Rushmore of Brewers pitchers. I think there's a case for Woody at the very top, and maybe it's more projecting ahead. Like if he is able to stay healthy for this one last year, I think that might put him over the top.
Who says it's one last year?
Well, that's the other thing. Like things have gone so well here.
I think. Look. And I think people do appreciate this about Woody, but I think I just want to, like, it's worth saying again. And he has chosen to come back to the Brewers now twice.
Yes.
Well, he didn't have to. You were right about his market. He could have gotten a lot more than he did. I mean, like, 1 year, 20, was it 22, 23 mil? That's obviously a lot to turn down. And if you're confident in your abilities, you can just go get paid next year again.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the underlying reasoning for him too, is like, okay, I'm going to be really good this year. But nevertheless, that just doesn't happen, especially with the Brewers. So I think that's a cool thing for that perspective as well.
A couple other things that I want to hit on before I see if you have any last storylines you want to follow. Really kind of a bummer story here that popped on Sunday. Frank Chirone, one of the prospects that the Brewers just drafted in the past draft class, high school pitcher, was in a bad car accident in New Jersey. He's in the hospital being treated. Don't know the extent of how bad that is, but that is some bad news for sure. You know, this guy's years and years away from the big leagues, but obviously it was a one of the top few round picks and highly regarded high school player that I know the Brewers were really excited about. So that is a bummer and something that we'll have to follow as well. I did want to see too, on a much more lighthearted note, did you see what Logan Henderson's friends, speaking of pitchers who are going to be a big part of the equation in 2026, did you see what Logan Henderson's friends got him for Christmas?
I did. That's pretty good. That's good. That's being a good friend.
keep him humble. They bought him a Topps card, a trading card, the baseball card. I guess I don't know what the terminology is these days. Kids with their packs and their, I don't know. I'm a little bit a C when we talk trading cards, but they have these Topps Now series, which commemorates moments or statistical achievements. And they had a card for O'Neill Cruz, the Pirate slugger, hitting in the StatCast era, the hardest hit ball ever recorded in the StatCast era. It was a missile sent into the Allegheny River against, of course, Logan Henderson. So his friends commemorating possibly his worst pitch ever, or at least worst outcome ever, giving him a card commemorating that moment, I thought was very, very funny. I should point out, he faced O'Neill Cruz three times that day. He struck him out the other two times. The Brewers won that game. The Brewers, again, are 5-0 in starts Logan Henderson made. There's a lot to love about what Logan Henderson did in 2025, but his friends found that thing, that one thing, to keep him humble. He gave up three homers, and one of them is on the Topps trading card. Very, very funny stuff.
So the thing to know, like, to take away from this is the Brewers have an unusually high number of, like, normal dudes in their in their young pitching staff. Miz, need we say any more? Like,
do you think he's normal? Would you classify him that way? He's an interesting dude.
I mean, I think he's interesting, but like,
he's down to earth.
I think he's the most normal baseball player I've ever encountered.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. Well, we'll see what fame does to these guys, like, after a while.
He is, I don't know. I just think he's just so regular.
Basically.
And then Henderson's up there too, frankly. And then Quinn Priester, I mean, you've probably seen his interviews. Like,
I love that guy.
The dude loves Eagle River.
I love
him. He's clear-headed and just another down to earth regular guy. And like, these are the young pitch. Robert Gasser's kind of the same way, with a little more SoCal, but extremely, like, regular 26, whatever he is, year old guy.
Yeah, these are good dudes. Quinn Priester, Bears fan. So he'll be on edge as the Packers play the Bears in the playoffs next week.
A lot of Bears fans.
Caleb Durbin, I think, is a Bears fan.
No, that's good.
Because I was gonna say, I'm not sure where he stands in the NFL.
He is, I would say, Steelers turned Packers.
Okay, yes, that's right. I think I did know that.
He was a White Sox guy, kind of like, for a suburban Chicago kid, like, oddly not really into sports teams.
Seems that way.
So he's like loosely White Sox affiliated and like loosely Steelers affiliated. But apparently when him and Ortiz and Terang and Eric Fetty went to
Eric Fetty was there.
went to that Packers game against the Commanders, because Tressway, Bryce Terang's brother-in-law, was punting. Pro Bowler this year, Tressway.
Pro Bowl Tressway, two-time Pro Bowl punter.
That family has too many athletes. Like, it's share, please.
Yes. Remember, Bryce Terang's wife, who's married to Tressway, won a College World Series championship with Oklahoma softball. Thank you.
Literally everyone in that family is a highly successful.
They were all D1 athletes. It's disgusting. They're so good.
Not Bryce Terang, not a D1 athlete.
So. No, well, there were mitigating circumstances. Yes. Good point. Good point. Could have been a D1 athlete.
Yeah. Hey, NIL era, the Brewers might not sign him.
No, I think that's right.
I don't know what kind of money LSU has to throw at first round picks, but
different era.
I don't know if he was like a huge school guy, but did like LSU a lot. Anyway, that football game, apparently Caleb Durbin the whole time, like they're just in their suite. He's just leaning over with his cheese head on, trying to start Go Pack Go chants, like the whole game.
That's so endearing.
I think Durbin will be full on Packers rooting.
I appreciate this. That's excellent. Joey Ortiz, big Packers fan, California guy, but big Packers.
But he did not know Donald Driver.
Oh, interesting. Well, I do think he's new to that, but he became a Packers fan before he joined this organization, but he is still a newer Packers fan.
Yeah, okay, not like a. But still. Yeah,
that's a little surprising, but you know, I'm not going to judge.
When Donald Driver was there this spring training, I think he was like the first base coach for an inning or something. I should remember. I was literally there, but.
And he's like, who are you?
Someone, it might've been me. Someone said to Joey, like, oh, Donald Driver's here. And he's like, I don't remember who that is.
You have to remember, Kurt, these people are much younger than us. They maybe don't remember seeing Donald Driver.
Joey's like, they were not Joey's with like, us. He's like 4 years younger than me.
I know.
3 years, maybe.
I know, but you know, I'm just saying there's an age gap. What else, Kurt? What else? What other thoughts have you had here this offseason before we wrap this up?
That would be like me not knowing who Robert Ferguson is.
Donald
Driver is way better than Robert Ferguson.
I feel like Robert Ferguson is a type of player that you know if you are a diehard Packers fan as a youth. I mean, he was not very good. Second round pick, and like he was a starter.
I thought he was better than that, so never mind.
I mean, didn't he have like pit bulls? Like not in a Michael Vick way, in a like I think he raised pit
bulls. In a Dale way?
I don't know. I shouldn't have brought this up. What else, Kurt? What else are we talking about here?
Fireball.
I'm on fire. All
right. I got lots of thoughts.
That song was played a lot on New Year's Eve, I guarantee it. Like in the world.
I can't believe I'm doing Jake Bowers again.
We're here and we're doing it again. We're running it back.
I told myself I wasn't going to do it again. And here I am like, yeah, you know, this guy is actually going to be really good this year.
He's going to show up in the best shape of his life in spring training. And he's going to mean it. It's going to actually be the best shape of his life.
I am worried that like the end zone contact is not going to be like, he got improved in that area last year. I'm worried that was like the one off, that was the aberration. And then he's just going to whiff too much ultimately. But like, if it's not the aberration, we might need to pay attention here a little bit more than we are. That's all I'll say.
Is he the starting first baseman? Are they not even going to try anything else?
Well, King Vaughn.
Oh yes, of course. Andrew Vaughn.
Did you just forget about King Vaughn?
Well, I was imagining in a world where a right-hander is starting the opening day, which of course I cannot assume. So,
the Brewers used to play this song. It was a very explicit song. They do not play it after games anymore in the clubhouse.
Oh, in the clubhouse. I'm like, over the sound speaker? I don't remember this. Tell me more.
Yeah, the clubhouse speakers. And for some reason, it would always be playing when we walked in there.
Okay.
I don't know if it's the timing thing or what, but it does seem all the regularly that there's like one song that you hear as you're walking in. Anyway, I didn't realize it at the time. I just realized this yesterday, actually. It was a King Vaughn song.
Oh, interesting. Are we talking, was that this year, like post
this was like I remember this in like 22 or 23. Okay. Before Vaughn.
I wonder if the Brewers are going to lean back into the King Vaughn thing year two King Vaughn, or if they're just like, let's forget that happened and just maybe not do that this
dude their shirts.
I'm aware their shirts, it was a giveaway, it was a pretty popular giveaway. I think King Vaughn the rapper is not somebody that you want to like borrow the moniker of for a player. It's just, there's a lot, a lot to unpack. I also feel like we could do a lot more with Vaughn, specifically the thing that I bring up a lot, which is the return of the Vaughn's Valley sign in left field. I don't know why that hasn't happened yet. That can't, that's like a Kinko's printing job. If Kinko's still exists, the Brewers just need to go to Kinko's and make a Vaughn's Valley sign for left field. That needs to happen again. And maybe with an off season in between, they can actually pull that off.
I think they have their own Kinko's.
They might, but I'm just saying it's not hard. I could do it. I mean, it was going to cost me more money than I want, but it's possible. Maybe they're just waiting for the organic, you know, or maybe the slide is in the way now and they can't really pull that off the way that they would have.
That's
then.
True.
Come on, that's true. Guys.
JR, I wish bobbleheads were still great.
Well, they're not. They're not. I wish
I wish that was something that still mattered to the organization for its fans because, buddy, I could chalk up some good ones for this year. I could chalk up some real good ones.
All right, tell me your bobblehead lineup for 2026.
Oh, God, I'm going to have to come up with them on the spot.
I'm
looking at the roster right now. Chad Patrick, fist bump of death.
That one would not make my cut, but okay.
I'm just looking at the roster. It has to be a cool bobblehead, not just like Jacob Mizorowski.
Oh, excuse you. That's cool. That's perfectly cool.
You could do the Jacob Mizorowski fist pump too.
Agreed. That's the fist pump. That's the one that you want. That is the bobblehead that everybody wants.
Oh, William Contreras foam. Easy.
We've had one of him.
Oh, the foam though. Easy.
Good call.
Easy.
Literally a good call. All right. What about like, you know, Jared Koenig? He doesn't get any love. Can we get a middle reliever bobblehead? Can we get an Aaron Ashby bobblehead?
You should do a middle reliever set. Them all.
Yes. Like
the minis.
Let's go.
Ashby, Koenig.
I mean, Craig Yoho. Well, McGill, if he's still here, I mean, for sure.
We're running out of middle
relievers. We are running out of middle relievers.
McGill, Abner are in closer to
Rob Zastrzewski.
Yeah, Rob
Abner. Abner's a full-fledged bobblehead. I think Abner would make that cut for sure. So that's three guys. I think you're going to see Murphy with his pocket pancakes as four, even though I don't want that.
I want, well,
then it's Andrew Vaughn.
Can we lean into Short Kings? Can we do Caleb Durbin growth chart?
Yes, that's not condescending at all. We should absolutely do that. In fact, the mini bobble set should just be people who are under 6 feet tall. So that means Sal Frelick, come on down. Brandon Lockridge, come on down. Although I think he's really, really close. Caleb Durbin, of course. Maybe Andrew Vaughn we can get away with on that front. Maybe we can also do Stuart Baroa because he is mentioned for the second time. He is on the short side. So or Luis Lara. He might actually be a big leaguer this year.
I'm so sad that this is nowhere to be found because I don't think they showed it on the broadcast. You know, his one contribution to this team besides the fake bunts was when he threw the runner out at home in the first inning of his first start.
Yes, that's right.
In Cincinnati. Oh,
right, the game that should have gotten way out of hand. Did get out of hand.
His celebration, JR, like, it has to be on camera somewhere. Someone please show this. The people need to see it.
You know, and I feel badly about this because I'm sitting behind on the third baseline at that game at Great American Ballpark. So I see it. I can picture the moment, but I'm watching the plate, you know, like I'm watching what's going on there. I'm not watching center field. And so I regret that I unfortunately do not have that in my mind's eye. Very sad.
That's all right. Not everyone can have their eyes everywhere.
And that's right. That's right. Kurt, what else are we going to talk about? We got to go.
I got nothing else for you.
Sad. Bobblehead should be made great again, but
maybe a Bryce Terang like weightlifting bobblehead.
Yes,
or I think Bryce Terang leaping.
How would
you best personify, embody a quantum leap? Does that have to be like in space?
Yes, they have to figure out a way to literally suspend a ceramic bobblehead off the ground. You know, the Brewers, you have to give them credit for their giveaways this year between the Miz t-shirt, the cribbage board. Obviously, those are the two big ones. So I think we're just going to see more movement away from the bobblehead thing because they're getting more creative. They're getting more inventive and people are lapping it up. So I'll be interested to see how attendance flows through the first couple months. If we see an uptick there after the season they had last year, their attendance was very good after a slow start. So maybe I'd be curious to see if April and May really reflect that. And they end up pushing again for one of the top 10 attendances in baseball. Kurt, I think that's all we have. It's cold. It's miserable. It's January. But we have to talk baseball again soon. We've gone too long. Like a whole month has gone by since we talked baseball. We need to do it again, Kurt. Are you game for this?
It is coming. It is coming soon.
That's right.
Prepare yourselves. Prepare your bodies. Prepare your minds. Prepare your souls.
Earlier than normal, too, because of the World Baseball Classic. So, you know, February. Well,
that is true.
Not a lot earlier, but still. He is Kurt Hoag. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. If the Milwaukee Brewers make a move, he'll tell you about it. He's a geopolitical reporter. He's a whatever you need him to be. And I'm JR Radcliffe, of course. I got plenty at jsonline.com as well. Thank you for tuning into this edition of Microbrew. We'll be back again with you very soon. Happy New Year, everybody. Talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.